Paranormal Investigations Hawaii. From the case files of Harry Wong, Paranormal Investigator. Season 1, Episode 9, The Cursed Cubicle. When my phone rang unexpectedly this morning at 6.05 a.m. and woke me up out of a hangover-induced nightmare in which I was being chased by giant green bottles of beer yelling, "Buy me drinky, buy me drinky." Don't ask. I glanced at the caller ID, which read, "Answer at your own peril," which was the contact name I used for my mother. My first sleep-deprived instinct was to let it go to voicemail, but what if she had fallen and couldn't get up, and for whatever reason, she decided to call me instead of calling 911 like I told her to do in an emergency? I reluctantly answered the call.
Hello? What is it, Ma? Is everything okay? Did you fall down or have a heart attack?
Of course I'm okay. I'll call 911 if I have heart attack, silly. Why are you still asleep? You know what today?
Jesus, Ma, it's 6 a.m. Nobody works at 6 a.m. unless they made some poor life choices.
I work 6 a.m. in the field when I was child, so I can give you a better life to sleep late and get drunk and meet bought a girl who have the VD. You better no catch the VD.
I don't have the VD, Ma. Now, what was so important that you had to call me at this hour?
I get bill from doctor that say I owe money. I get insurance, so why they no pay?
I think that's the copay.
That's what I say. Why they no pay?
Not no pay. I said copay.
Doctor say I have to pay $1,000 or they take me to jail. I no have $1,000. I go be all broke and I have to move in with you.
Oh, no, Ma. I'll drive you down to the benefits office this afternoon and we'll get this thing straightened out, okay? Now, let me sleep off the rest of my hangover, please.
Okay. No be late, I'll be waiting. Come early and I make joke for you. Good for hangover and the VD.
I don't have the VD. Bye, Ma. I slept off my hangover, ran some errands, and it was late afternoon when I was finally able to pick up my mother. We rushed over to the benefits office and arrived just before they closed. Usually, I hated going into an establishment right before closing time because I remembered the summer after I graduated high school when I worked at Mickey D's, how much I hated having to scrape that cold, grimy burger off the grill and reheat it in the microwave to serve that last-minute customer when I was ready to boogie on out of there to spend all my hard-earned money, $1 at a time, at my favorite gentleman's club, which at that time was Club Saigon Passion. But I had to make sure my mother's health insurance was fixed because if she had to move in with me, my next place of residence after that would be in a padded room. We approached a middle-aged woman at the front counter who looked like she had her fill of boneheaded questions for the day. So I was sure she wouldn't mind one more.
Aloha. We're just about to close, but you are so extremely lucky to have made an insight just as I was about to lock the door. So now I have to help you. Aloha, how can I help you?
Sorry about that. My mother's health insurance should be paying for 100% of her doctor visits, but she received a bill from her doctor who said her insurance was canceled. So we wanted to find out what happened.
Let me take a look at her account. Hang on a sec. Oh dear, I'm so sorry, sir. We just installed a new database system, and it's been canceling people by mistake left and right. I'll fix this right away, and you should be good to go.
Don't tell me. You went with the lowest bidder, right?
That's your tax dollars at work.
Hey, lady, how old you?
I'm sorry, ma'am?
Ma, leave the poor woman alone. She just wants to finish up and go home after you made us come here at the last minute.
I asked, how old you? You married?
Yes, ma'am. I'm married.
Okay, never mind. My son Harry need a wife, but he too poor. I told him, study hard, become doctor, but he only like drink green beer and smoke stinky weed all day.
Ma, you know I do more than that.
Yes, he work as ghost hunter now. Why work with ghosts? They don't have pockets, so they don't have money.
Sorry about that, Hoku. If you're done, we'll be on our way. Come on, Ma, let's go. I tried to pull my mother away from the counter with no luck. How could an 80-year-old 4'11" woman be so strong?
You're a ghost hunter?
Well, sort of. My name is Harry Wong, PI. I'm a paranormal investigator. I investigate scientifically based claims of the paranormal and assist people who experience supernatural phenomena.
Like I say, ghost hunter. The weather may be sunny, but if you ain't got no money, then there ain't no freaking way that you be getting any honey.
What a delightful mother you have, Mr. Wong. I might want to hire you to look into some unexplained activity here in our office that might be caused by the supernatural.
You should know that office hauntings are a well-known source of fake paranormal reports. People have the wildest imaginations when they are in an environment of high stress and are looking for any and all reasons to blame for it. And besides, I'm kind of in the middle of a few cases right now, but I can give you the names of some other people who might be able to help.
That why you know money. Too busy with junky cases. You should take this case and charge a double for canceling my insurance.
I made my best effort to ignore my mother, but it wasn't easy.
Can I tell you what we've been experiencing before you say no?
Sure thing, but it'll have to be pretty convincing for me to drop everything.
Well, it first started when we moved into this office a few years ago. Sometimes, when walking around the place, we would suddenly feel pockets of cold air, like we stepped through something or someone that couldn't be seen. We heard doors opening and closing by themselves. Then, about a year ago, the activity seemed to escalate. Black claw-like prints appeared on the cabinets. There were whispers when no one was around. And sometimes, especially when working alone after hours, there was a feeling of being watched when no one was there. The lights would flicker off and on by themselves, and the motion sensors in the restrooms would trigger, even though it was unoccupied. But worst of all was this particular cubicle that we called the cursed cubicle. There was something wrong with it. Anyone who sat there felt a sense of heaviness or sluggishness, as if they were trapped and couldn't move. They heard whispers in a strange language, which conjured dark images of chaos and despair in their minds. Eventually, no one wanted to use that cubicle, so we turned it into a storage area. Then, I called a friend of mine, Ikaika, who was a native Hawaiian priest, or a kahuna, and asked him to stop by after hours to bless the office. He mentioned that some buildings in downtown Honolulu were built over old night marcher paths and that we should never work after dark during certain nights of the moon.
Yes. The night marcher paths allowed spirits of ancestors to travel between worlds, but they primarily appeared during new moons of Kane, Lono, Maoli, and Muku.
That's what Ikaika told us. He came by and brought tea leaves and alea salt from Kauai to purify the office, but when he got to the cubicle, he noticed a powerful and malicious force radiating from it which resisted the blessing. He had heard whispers of a power like this in the deepest depths of native lore, but he always thought these were just ancient myths about the Aumakua that was passed down through the ages.
Who is Aumakua, and what she have to do with Ghost Desk?
It's Aumakua, Ma, not Aumakua. Don't you remember the stories that Dad's Tutu used to tell us when we were keiki? Aumakua were spirits of ancestors who protected their descendants, sometimes by taking on the form of animals. I remember Tutu told us about how she used to body surf at Sandy Beach, and one day, when the surf was particularly rough, she was caught in a rip current, which started to pull her out into the open ocean. She struggled to swim back to shore until she was ready to collapse, when the fin of a shark surfaced in the water just a few feet away from her. She started to panic, but then she remembered that the shark was her family Aumakua. It swam parallel to the shore, and she followed it until she was safely out of the rip current.
Yes, normally Aumakua help the family members who are in need. However, Ikaikis said there was a long-lost legend about the Mo'o, or lizard clan, who corrupted the powers of their Aumakua and used it to conquer the other clans, who were only able to defeat the lizard clan after combining their forces in battle and suffering great losses. The other clans banished the lizard clan to one of the small distant islands where it was thought they had all perished. But Ikaikis said that the lizard clan must have survived somehow, because the dark force from the cubicle came from their corrupted power, enhanced by proximity to the energy from the Night Marcher paths. After Ikaika told me this, he turned pale and said he had to leave, that he could no longer be near the cubicle. But as he started to walk out of the office, he suddenly stopped and froze in place, as if he were paralyzed. His face became an expression of agony. He tried to scream, but nothing came out of his mouth. He slumped to the ground and fell unconscious, as if he were injured by some object. We dragged him out of there and called an ambulance, which took him to Queen's Hospital, where he has been in a coma ever since.
I remember the Lizard Clan story was an old legend that had been dismissed by historians. But perhaps, like a lot of legends, there was still a grain of truth behind it. I should have just walked away at this point, but if something bad happened, like if giant lizard creatures crawled out from the cubicle and started eating people, I might feel kind of bad. Well, I guess it wouldn't hurt just to look at it. Okay, Hoku, I'm not promising anything, but let me take a look around.
Mahalo, I'm not supposed to just let anyone in here, so here, I'll give you $1 for your services as an environmental inspector, so you're officially doing business with us and I can let you in. The staff left early today because, for some reason, Teddy, the IT guy, scheduled the computer system for maintenance this afternoon, so the office will be empty, except for us and him. We kinda don't get along with each other, so you're gonna have to keep it down so we don't get in trouble.
Ma, why don't you wait here in the lobby for me?
No way. I'm not going to stay here alone and let Amakoa come get me.
It wasn't worth the effort to spend the next 30 minutes arguing with her, which I always lost anyways, so I let her come with us. Hoku led us past several cubicles until we reached one that had a forest of tea leaves surrounding it, along with pink salt scattered across the tabletop. She stopped around 10 feet away from the cubicle and would not get any closer.
This is it. We avoid getting too close to it, which I would suggest the same for you.
Don't worry. I have been accredited by PISS, the Paranormal Investigators Secret Society, and I possess a recently expired certificate, which I will be renewing as soon as I could afford it. It wasn't easy to pass a PISS test, so I assure you, I know what I'm doing. Hoku gave me a puzzled look, which I was used to, so I ignored it and stepped slowly toward the cubicle. An intuition in the back of my mind told me I should stay away from it, but an old friend once gave me this piece of advice. He said that the best way to uncover a trap was to spring it, but then he got his leg caught in a bear trap and had to have it amputated. Anyways, I felt like I had no choice if I wanted to get to the bottom of this. I inched forward, but I was still within a safe distance, when all of a sudden, I felt a chill come over me, as if the temperature dropped several degrees. Then, a buzzing sound began to ring in my head. I turned to look at Hoku, who gave me a concerned, knowing look. She mouthed something to me, but I couldn't hear it over the buzzing. Some force pulled me closer and closer to the cubicle until I heard a soft chanting in my left ear. I turned to look, but no one was there. The chanting grew louder and the words sounded vaguely Hawaiian, but I didn't recognize any of them. The chanting then grew louder still. I tried to cover my ears, but still could not shut it out because it was coming from inside my head. Suddenly, visions of an ancient ritual flashed into my mind. A group of hooded figures stood inside a cave. They were illuminated by firelight and stood over a body with a piece of cloth covering its head and ropes binding its arms and legs. Then, The figures repeated two words over and over. Mo'o Akua, which meant the lizard god. As they each pulled out a dagger from their cloaks, the blades gleamed menacingly in the firelight. With growing dread, I realized they intended to plunge their daggers into the helpless victim. The first hooded figure knelt down, raised their dagger with one hand, and pulled the cloth off the victim's head with the other. And it was then the full horror of the vision hit me, as I recognized that the victim was me. I struggled in vain against the ropes that bound my hands and feet as the hooded figure plunged the dagger into my chest. The pain consumed me as the hot steel ripped into my flesh. I screamed and tried to crawl away, but one by one, the other figures knelt and thrust their daggers into me. I began to lose consciousness, then felt my body being pulled away from the cave. I opened my eyes and found myself back in the office. Someone, probably Hoku, had dragged me away from the cubicle until I was outside its influence. The vision vanished as if it never happened. I checked my body. There were no stab wounds. It was all just part of the vision. But the pain continued to linger in my subconscious. What the heck just happened?
You went go crazy, Lolo.
I told you not to get too close. What happened? What did you see?
Ikaika was right. I had a vision, a nightmare of a long time ago when the lizard clan performed human sacrifices to serve their lizard god. They were supposed to have all died out a long time ago, along with their forbidden practices. But the evil contained in this cubicle was a curse created by someone who still practiced the dark magic of the lizard clan. Can you tell me who used this cubicle? The curse was created specifically to harm whoever sat there. If he or she had any enemies, it might give us a clue as to who cursed it.
That cubicle belonged to the IT manager, Roy Kwan. Poor guy. He volunteered to sit there after the strange incident started because no one else was willing to use the cubicle. He was okay for a while, but then the incidents escalated until he became violently sick and has been hospitalized with an unknown illness ever since.
Did anything else unusual happen about that time when the incidents escalated?
Now that you mention it, there was an incident with the IT guy.
That's the guy who is currently working in the computer room right now.
His name is Teddy Corona. I had to report him to Roy after my staff told me he was harassing and verbally abusing them. They were afraid he would eventually turn violent. Roy finally had to put him on probation because he had been reprimanded several times already for creating a hostile work environment.
Wait, did you say his name was Teddy Corona? Did he ever go by Theodore? Do you have a picture of him?
Here's a picture from Roy's birthday lunch that we celebrated a few months ago. Teddy is the guy skulking in the back.
Hoku showed me a picture from her phone. The name rang a bell, but I couldn't pinpoint it. I studied the picture carefully, and I immediately recognized him from a case I undertook not too long ago. Hoku, I knew this man as Theodore Kronauer. Several years ago, I consulted on a case by HPD. They were investigating a complaint by neighbors whose pets kept disappearing. After looking into his background, I suspected Kronauer was a practitioner of black magic and had stolen neighborhood pets for use in ritual animal sacrifices. But we couldn't find any evidence after searching his house. He moved away shortly after that and no more pets disappeared, so the case was dropped.
Harry, do you think Teddy used black magic to curse Roy's cubicle as revenge against being put on probation?
I wouldn't put it past him. When I was investigating the missing pet case, we found animal remains buried in his backyard, but we couldn't tie it to him. The carcasses looked like they were ripped apart by hand, but no normal human had the strength to do that. If he is in the office with us right now, then we need to get you two out of here right away before
suddenly, the overhead lights went out, leaving us in pitch blackness. Battery-powered emergency lights on the walls flickered on, emitting a harsh glow that illuminated a path to the exit doors, but the rest of the office remained in shadows. Then, some force slammed into me, knocking me onto my back and pinning my body to the ground. I had flashbacks of myself as a kid on the school playground with my rice bowl haircut, hand-me-down jeans that were several sizes too big, and a big local moke sitting on my chest until I gave him all my lunch money. I shook off that feeling and glanced over at my mother, who was also being restrained by the unseen force. Hoku stood next to her, but she was unaffected by whatever was happening to us. Then, a shrill, high-pitched voice came out from the shadows.
Hello, Hoku. You thought you could escape me, didn't you?
A man stepped out of the shadows, and I recognized him from Hoku's pictures. It was Teddy Corona, also known as Theodore Kronauer, the IT guy, Black Wizard of the Lizard Cult, and suspected pet mutilator.
Teddy, what are you doing?
He looked like a madman compared to the pictures. His hair was now completely white. His face was gaunt and lined with wrinkles. It was as if he aged 10 years since the pictures were taken. I knew that the use of black magic took a toll on the user, but seeing it up close was something else.
Didn't you hear about the computer maintenance today? Why are you still here after everyone else has left? Oh, yes. It's because you're so diligent to your work. Or is it because you're kissing up to your boss? No matter. I knew I could count on you to work late, so I planned this fake maintenance in order to get you alone. But alas for these two visitors, there would have been no witnesses, and my plans would have gone without a hitch. No matter. It's only two more bodies to dispose of.
Theodore, you don't have to do this.
Do not call me Theodore. That's what my mother called me. You're not my mother.
Spittle flew as he screamed at me. He was definitely a few bottles short of a six-pack. I would have to be careful now how I dealt with him if I didn't want to be squashed into a pancake by his invisible force.
I know it was you who reported me to Roy. He thought he was better than me, always telling me what to do, making me do the most menial tasks because he didn't trust me with the important stuff. I could do his job in my sleep. I know he only got his job because of his connections, just like the rest of you. While people like me have to work our way up from the bottom. Now he knows better. Now he knows how much more powerful I am than he ever was. I studied and sacrificed for decades to learn the dark secrets of the Lizard Cult. And now all that hard work will finally pay off. I cursed him, and you see what happened to him? You see the power I wield? But for some reason, I couldn't curse you or your possessions. There appears to be something protecting you from my powers. But will it protect you against? Oh, I don't know. A sharp blade of the Coronet Honorary? Let's find out, shall we? It'll be more fun this way anyways.
Teddy pulled out a large bolo knife and held it out in front of him. The deadly blade shone with an evil gleam, even in the emergency lighting. His eyes glazed over as if he was hypnotized, and his lips curled into a crooked smile, and it looked like as if he were drooling?
Teddy, I mean Theodore, you are one crazy-ass son of a bitch. You come near me with that thing, and I will beat you senseless with this.
Hoku grabbed the closest object she could find, a computer keyboard. She struggled to rip it out from the computer and held it up as a weapon.
This keyboard, made from the very finest Chinese plastic.
Knife versus keyboard? I like my chances.
Teddy closed the distance between Hoku and himself, raised the blade over his head, and swung it down at her. She instinctively brought up the keyboard in a defensive position. The blade struck the keyboard and cut it in half like it was made of hot butter mochi.
Let's see how many slices it takes to cut you in half.
Teddy brought up the knife again, ready to strike Hoku. She covered her head with her arms and braced for the blow. As Teddy's attention was distracted, the unseen force weakened its hold on me, and I was able to break its grip and get up off the ground. Without thinking, which was a common problem I seemed to have, I leapt at him and knocked him to the floor. I scrambled up and climbed on top of him as he lay face down. I grabbed the arm which held the knife and slammed it into the ground several times until he dropped it. I picked up the knife and stood up, holding it in front of me toward him. Get up, Theodore. But instead of standing, he just turned, sat up, faced me, and grinned like a madman.
You fool! That is an enchanted knife and cannot be used against me.
Oh, shizzle. I held the knife up with two hands and tried to slash him with all my might, but it would not budge no matter how hard I tried. He let out a sickening screech of a laugh.
I think this is what you wanted to do.
The knife then took on a life of its own. The sharp side of the blade flipped around toward me and started descending slowly toward my skull, even as I held the handle and tried to stop it. The knife continued down until it grazed my forehead. I felt a sharp pain as it split the skin and blood trickled down my face. I was moments away from having my skull dissected when I heard Hoku yell,
"Stop!"
and a blazing light appeared from the direction of the cubicle. All of a sudden, the knife lost its strength and stopped trying to kill me. I pulled it away from my head and threw it across the room. I glanced at Teddy, but his full attention was focused on the light now. His expression went from anger to fear, all within the span of a second, as he backed away from the increasing glow. I tried to look at it, but it was too bright now. I covered my eyes and squinted through my fingers to see that it came from right above the cubicle. I retreated back to join my mother and Hoku, who were both huddled behind a desk. What happened? What is that light?
I was about to ask you the same thing.
It's like from the movie Poker Guys. Step into light.
What movie? Poker Guys?
I think you meant Poltergeist. Ah, never mind. Then a small shape stirs from within the light. Something was coming out from the inside. It was hard to see with the glare, but it looked like a bird with a beak and a pair of wings which spread wide as it hopped out and flew up into the air away from the cubicle. I was astonished to recognize that it was a pu'e'o, a Hawaiian short-eared owl with mottled brown beige feathers and distinctive yellow eyes. It flew all the way up to the ceiling to gain momentum. Then it flew straight down at Teddy while emitting a loud, high-pitched screech.
I don't believe it. The pu'e'o housed my family's amakua, our ancestral guardian spirit.
The pu'e'o spread its talons as it neared Teddy. He raised his arms in a posture like he was trying to cast a spell. But if he did, it had no effect. The owl clawed at his face and then landed on his back.
No!
Teddy screamed and thrashed about unsuccessfully as the owl picked him up by the shoulders and lifted him into the air. The sight of a cute little owl carrying a grown-ass man almost made me laugh out loud. But I didn't want to take a chance and make it mad and then have it come back for me, since I was sure it could pick me up, even with my big chunky ass. The owl flew back into the light with Teddy in tow. He screamed one last pitiful cry,
"No!"
before they both disappeared. The light then faded into blackness, which left an imprint in my vision until my eyes adjusted back to normal. The office lights came back on a few seconds later, but there was nothing out of place at the cubicle and no evidence anything unusual ever happened.
What the F? Where is Batman? Where is Bud?
He's been taken into the other side, Ma. Hopefully for good. Hoku, it makes sense now. Teddy's magic was created from corruption of the Mo'o-Amakua, or the Lizard Guardian's powers. When he threatened you, your Pu'e'o-Amakua, or our guardian, came to protect you.
I grew up hearing about our family Pu'e'o-Amakua, but I always thought they were just stories told to scare us kids into behaving. But now I know better.
I think your cursed cubicle should be safe to use now.
Mahalo, Harry.
How about me? I hope too.
Mahalo to you, Ma.
I don't need mahalos. Just be you pick cash for saving you ass. Venmo okay too.
We all laugh. It was time to go. Hoku locked up and we waited in the lobby for the elevator. I couldn't wait to drop off my mother and then stop by Club Femnu to gulp down a few green bottles and donate some dollar bills to single mothers. What? After what just happened? I needed the stress relief. Don't judge! The elevator arrived and we got in. Before the door closed, the sound of a copy machine spitting out paper came from inside the empty office. Then, faintly, the sound of a toilet flushing came from inside the empty restroom. We looked at each other with confused, nervous expressions as the elevator door started to close. What the F? I thought the office was empty.
It was empty when I locked up.
I was just about to press the open door button to go see what the heck was going on when my mother slapped my hand away and pressed the closed door button several times until the elevator door shut. I gave her an annoyed, puzzled look, but as the elevator descended, she looked me straight in the eye and said,
"Oh no, I'm too old for this shit."
You have been listening to Paranormal Investigations Hawaii from the case files of Harry Wong, Paranormal Investigator, a fictional podcast.